Good afternoon. Welcome to this episode of the Postural Restoration Podcast. Today, I am excited not only to welcome a long-awaited guest that we've been trying to connect here for a while, but also the last of our faculty interviews. For anyone that has been listening up to this point, first of all, I thank you for continuing this journey. It's totally a new thing for us and for myself. And we're really excited about the opportunities that we can get into with this podcast going forward. But today I want to kind of, wrap up our faculty series of interviews with, one of our newer faculties that many of you know. Today we have Louise Kelly on the show with us. Welcome, Louise, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, RJ. Excited to be here.
And Louise, I'm going to quickly list off some of your accolades here and history for those of the listeners that don't know. Louise is a practicing Master of Physical Therapy in Bethesda, Maryland. Louise got her degree MPT from Emory University back in 1989. And then Louise, I'm excited to ask you a little bit about the journey to transition that as a DPT in 2014. It looks like you kind of circled back to some schooling. So we'll get into that. And Louise, you, as we just mentioned before this, became a PRC and certified through our institute in 2011. So we will get into all of those things. And again, many of you know Louise from her postural course and teaching for us throughout the country. But again, I thank you for taking time to join us today, Louise.
You bet.
Louise, to start off, why don't we go ahead and start off with kind of what I mentioned, some of your schooling. As I mentioned earlier, you eventually matriculated from Emory University with your physical therapy degree and a master's through the master's program. But let's go back even a little further, Louise, if you don't mind. Maybe just some of your earlier years growing up, how you got an interest for the field of physical therapy, whether that was in high school as an a lot of people go through an injury themselves and then have to go see a PT, whether you had some family in your life that was in the medical fields. But walk us through a little bit of what got your interest peaked in the field itself.
So my interest came actually pretty late. I was at Catholic University, and I decided to go there because my brother had graduated from there, had a great experience. And I became close to the coach, the running coach. So I ran track and I ran cross country at Catholic University. And at the time, there were a couple of other runners there. They were teammates of mine that were very competitive in my area in high school. So it was just fun for me to join a very competitive team and at the same time go to just an excellent program in biology, which my brother had gone through. So it was a nice combo. So I went through Catholic University, got my degree in biology, but I had never even heard of physical therapy. And most of my classmates, because I was really biology pre-med, so the majority of my classmates went on to medical school, but I never had an interest in medical school. I had no one in my family who was a doctor. I had no mentor in that area. So there I was with a biology degree and thinking, okay, now what? I didn't have a strong interest in research at the time, but I did go through a couple of injuries in my running career at Catholic University and was rehabbed with an athletic trainer there. So I had some interest, and he had recommended that I either consider athletic training or physical therapy. So I decided to start with volunteering, and I started volunteering at a pediatric center with a physical therapist. And then I went on to a geriatric center. Then I went on into an acute care hospital. I went on to a sports medicine place. I mean, I covered all of my bases. And at every step of the way, I loved the field. I thought, this is really what I want to do.
That's awesome because, I was totally wrong kind of getting into the topic as far as, most people have this, you said you did have some injury exposure and eventually the athletic trainer that kind of opened your eyes to the fields. But, really, I found myself actually in your same position, holding a biology degree. I kind of did the research route for a few years. But you kind of get to that point and you wonder, oh crap, what now, you know, what now, what next? But that's interesting that you really found it through, you know, not a ton of exposure and then just ended up loving it. So where was, if you don't mind telling us kind of where you grew up and where, what university was that at? And then where was your first kind of, not necessarily going through all of those volunteering places, but where was your first roots for physical therapy planted? What drew you to Emory, or what other schools were you considering? What, you know, what route got you actually into the University of Emory and into that program? And how did you decide that that was kind of, maybe it wasn't your top choice or maybe it was, but walk us through kind of the path to get there.
So when I made the final decision that physical therapy was the route I wanted to take, I took some additional coursework. So my biology degree wasn't quite enough for, I think it was University of Maryland required statistics and another school required another course. So I went to the community college and finished those requirements. And at the time, there weren't very many master's programs out there. So I remember applying to Beaver College, Boston University, University of Miami. Emory was on my radar, but they didn't start their program until the following year. So I applied to the previous three, and I got into University of Miami and was ready to go. I put my down payment down on housing, and I was ready to move. And Bruce, my future husband, was living in Miami at the time, so it was all falling into place. And then they called and said, we've had to stop the program. They couldn't get funding. And so my world was upended, and there was still, however, time to apply to Emory. So I think I got that application completed in maybe a night or two. It was hastily done. And you know, luckily, it was good enough. I was called down for an interview, and I got in. And in the meantime, Miami got their act together and was able to get the funding, but I decided not to take the risk. Emory accepted me, and I decided to go there.
And you still are with the same man, Bruce, who was stuck in Miami while you decided to stay there.
Somehow, some way, it all worked out.
So this master's track, you know, not everyone, there's so many different routes today and I can't even keep, you know, it changes by the year, it seems like. But after going through that program, Louise, before we get into, you know, your actual clinical work and exposure and being a PT in the field, and this is going to be a little bit of a gap in time here, but I want to just cover it while we're talking about education. Coming out with that master's, which maybe you didn't initially, but walk us through what that program was like in comparison to, let's say, the Miami or the other schools you were applying for. And then at the time, you know, they switched now to the doctorate program and you now hold your DPT as well. So walk us through like the degree you came out with and then kind of the evolution over the years that led you back to getting the DPT in 2014.
Well, I'm always interested in learning and growing, always. Emory was a great program, fantastic. I am so happy that I went there. The emphasis at Emory was on neurology and a neurological approach to rehab. And I remember doing chest PT, and I don't know if they do that anymore. I remember going through NDT, neurodevelopmental technique, PNF, Brunstrom. Those things were emphasized at Emory, and you know they still inform me today. There's you know a huge now gap between my degree there and my DPT. So if you fast forward to 2012 now, I decided to get the DPT because, first of all, people were coming out with their doctorate. And I felt like the public really didn't know the difference between and who had a doctorate in it and who didn't. And I didn't want that to influence their decision on whether or not to see me. And at the time, I had left the insurance model and went to fee-for-service model, where it was a cash-based practice. So I wanted to be sure that I was seen in the eyes of the public anyway, as you know, sort of worthy of their care.
Yeah.
my coworker had started the Evidence in Motion Institute of Health Professions, and it's a fantastic program. It was a transitional doctorate, and most of that was done online. There were just 4 weekends in which I needed to take coursework, you know, travel and take coursework. And she had nothing but great things to say. It was affordable, and she really thought I'd enjoy it, and she was right. So starting in 2012, from 2012 to 2014, I was very involved. It was, my gosh, it consumed me. So I was working, I'd come home, and I had homework every night until late in the night for 2 years.
Well, and it's just, it's really a cool story, because if you think about that gap that you mentioned from, let's say, 1990, 1989 to 2012, the field itself had changed. You know, there's what, practically 2 decades there of time where treatment approaches changed. You know, as you mentioned, first of all, how cool that you were doing chest, you know, chest therapy at Emory, and that they even covered the thorax in that detail. But a lot had changed probably in 2 decades. So here you are kind of relearning things that you probably initially learned either differently or not. You know, maybe you covered things at Emory that, you know, weren't covered or now being discussed in a different way 20 years later. So you really got like another whole level of understanding of that program.
Well, it gave me a bit of a window into what is being taught currently. And I believe what's being taught currently is a lot of the manipulation. So kind of an osteopathic manipulation approach to treatment. And the articles we were required to read all involved comparing exercise to manipulation and the short-term outcomes on pain in the neck, low back pain, et cetera. And all of my weekend intensives, which were my continuing education courses outside of the home, involved mastering manipulation of all of the joints of the body, basically. So that was a huge emphasis. And it's funny, as much, you know, as well as I learned it, I don't use a lot of that, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I would say from people I talk to, and maybe it's just certain pockets, and you know, every school, every state has multiple schools, it seems like, and you know, there may be one osteopathic school and one more traditional state, whatever it may be. There is a lot of that osteopathic thinking, which, you know, in most regards, I think is a very positive thing as well. Louise, so from there, let's now circle back to kind of, you know, you're a new grad with your MPT back, you know, let's say the 90s. You have such a rich history here with the National Rehab Hospital and many years spent there. And again, I have this listed as kind of your first clinical exposure, but correct me if I'm wrong and walk us through a little bit of your first clinical exposures. Coincidentally, it looks like you almost followed suit with some of your volunteering. It looks like you got a little bit of everything throughout those first couple of years being in the field. But walk us through what it was like coming out of that program and then trying to implement what you learned and where that was with the National Rehab Hospital or elsewhere.
Well, it was a great decision to start at NRH. I started on the inpatient unit, working with people who had stroke and amputation. And I spent 2 years on the inpatient unit. And so many good things to say about this. First of all, there was a huge, wonderful team of clinicians that I got to learn from. I don't remember how many, maybe 50 other physical therapists were part of the NRH program. And the director of education was also well-versed in a neurological approach. So a lot of in-services were spent reviewing concepts of PNF and NDT, reviewing concepts of proper gait training, assistive devices. So I learned about those things. As an inpatient PT, I was able to collaborate with the physicians, the OTs, the speech therapists, the social workers, the work hardening specialists. So we were really part of a team. And it was really part of a collaborative team as we discussed our patients' needs, their progress, and really the obstacles that they were going to be facing going back home.
And this was initially in Washington, D.C., I believe, and then later
yes.
There's all these different locations. What about one, you did some moving around after, spent several years at each location, and it was all under the same organization. But was it your decision to kind of have interest in these other outpatient centers, or was that requested by them because they needed you elsewhere? Was there differences in the types of patients at each of these centers?
Yes, it was my decision. So after 3 years at NRH, they were opening up their first outpatient clinic. It was in Bethesda, so not nearly as far a drive. I had been interested in outpatient anyway, so I interviewed for that position and got it. And the manager at the time was Jan Dahmerholt, just a brilliant man. So again, really a mentor for me and someone that I learned a lot from. And at that clinic, we started a lot of programs. He was a musician, so we had a special program for musicians, for dancers. We had a back school program that I helped develop with him, a prenatal and postpartum program, a golf program, a running program. So I was involved in a lot of program development, which really excited me.
Yeah, and really it sounds like you kind of paralleled their growth. It gave you the opportunity to kind of be involved with some of that growth as far as, okay, here's a brand new outpatient center. Yes, I'd like to transition to it. What interests do we have? Which routes do we want to take? And all those things you just mentioned. Talk about such a diverse way to get exposure as a new PT. And, by new, I mean within the, first several years of your career. What did you struggle with most, Louise, about, not just outpatient care, but care in general? Maybe it was whatever subset that maybe was either the least interesting to you or maybe the thing that you struggled most with patients. But do you have anything that comes to mind when it comes to like early struggles as a new PT?
Nothing. I don't think that's unique. I mean, for all of us coming out, we only have our schooling and our clinical rotations, to go on in terms of our knowledge base. So suddenly, you're thrust into this
world.
You're now in charge of the patient's program. You're the one in charge. And it can be a little daunting at first. But again, I'm thankful I started off at NRH with, 49 other therapists that I could turn to and get assistance from. So they were so valuable in that way. I had the opportunity to work in the post-polio clinic. So a physician, Laurel Halstead, he was a physician at NRH, and he started this program, and I got to be a part of that. And this involved seeing outpatients who came in who had polio, survived, and then decades later were coming back with this new weakness. That was a challenging caseload because it was almost as though they were undergoing a post-traumatic stress syndrome. Here they were all over again, dealing with this sudden weakness. And then denial that they were sick again. It was they really went through an emotional and physical struggle at that time. So while I'm thankful I had that opportunity, that was very challenging for me to help them overcome that.
Not to even spend too much time on it, but we don't know with new sicknesses coming out, every year, the current climate that we all live in. I'm sure there's many grads that have that same, whether it's post-traumatic injury or rehab or whatever they might have had. In your case, it was a polio, kind of outpatient care unit. But you have to find ways to increase their interest and, okay, yes, you are sick again. You had this thing in the past, but we're here to kind of do what we can to restore your mechanics and your function now. So that was... As you said, I can't imagine kind of the struggle there with some of those people.
And you're young when you come out, you're in your 20s. So you yourself are still, trying to emotionally mature. So it's difficult.
Yeah. Yep. Louise, right around that time, again, you're still with NRH, which you've been kind of using the acronym, but for anyone that didn't catch it, National Rehab Hospital, and at this time it was a outpatient center that you were a part of. Around that time, which we just kind of joked around before recording, was, I believe, your first exposure to PRI, which was around 2007. Again, you had at that point been with NRH for, you know, it looks like probably close to like 17 years, you know, a pretty long stint there. And, you know, you kind of mentioned some of those areas and different outpatient settings you worked with and different populations. But who was it or how was it that you first became exposed to PRI, whether that was through colleagues at NRH or mentors elsewhere? But walk us through your first exposure with our science and how that came about.
So my first exposure was at a course that I was taking given by Phil Donnelly, a physical therapist, and his course was on physical therapy for the overhead athlete. And he had recently taken a PRI course and mentioned it in his course that we were attending. He talked excitedly about it. He showed us, I think it was the Huresca lift test. And it was just so unusual for all of us, but he exposed us to that. And he really highly recommended that we at least look up postural restoration. So I decided to do that. I scribbled down the name. I mean, here's a man who at the time had been a PT for, it must have been 4 years. So very experienced. So for someone like that to say, you really ought to look it up, you know, you listen to that. So I did, I looked it up, and there wasn't a lot on the website at the time. So this is back in 2005. But what was on there was the article that Ron wrote with Dowling, and it was on the hamstring. It was on the triplanar influences of the hamstring. And it was that article that got me. I had never thought about the hamstring in that regard, that it had such an influence on the pelvis, and it was a triplanar muscle, and that's really what got me. And I said, I've got to take a course. It took me a while to get to a course because following that, NRH did approach me, and they said, look, we're trying to develop a lymphedema program for post-mastectomy patients. Would you be willing to take this on? So I said yes. And so I needed to take coursework on that. And then interestingly, right around the same time I heard of PRI, my coworker, Cindy Anderson, who is now also a PRC, she had heard of the coursework. And she got interested and she wanted to take myokinematics. So the two of us wanted to take this course. We flipped a coin, she won. She got to take myokinematics before I did. But she kindly brought the information into the clinic, and the two of us would sit down at lunch and go over it together, and she'd teach me some things. We ended up starting a little study group in our little clinic. And so I was at least exposed to it from 05 till I got to a course in 07.
And you kind of hopefully, as most people in that situation, you know, you have a colleague take a course, they come back. A lot of outpatient clinics hold, you know, a weekly staff meeting, or maybe not weekly, but they have that person that went to a Donahue course, you know, whoever it was, whatever course it was, they come back and kind of disseminate that to the group. But hopefully you had not only the information, but the availability to kind of start implementing it very minorly, you know, at a very minute level, kind of start playing with some of the positional, even if they were at that time just concepts to you.
And that's exactly what Cindy and I did. We just started to apply it to patients, the little that we understood at the time. But, you know, it doesn't take much to see that there's something to it, and it doesn't take much to make a change in your patient.
Well, and, you know,
quickly.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a lot, but for some people, Louise, you know, even having that one person in your, you know, even having Cindy with you to just bounce ideas back and forth off of and implement some concepts. As you know, from people you teach and discuss, you know, with at the courses, some people are on these, we call islands, where they're just the sole person in their community. It could be in the whole state or the whole, the whole country of Canada or whatever it may be. Not everyone has that capability of working next to someone and trying to utilize the science. So it doesn't take a lot, as you said, to see change, but it may take, you know, 5, 10, 15 different tries before either you're doing something properly or your patient responds properly that you see that change. So yeah, it can happen instantly, like you said. And for some people, you know, that's not always the case, but you know, how awesome when it is and you can work in a setting with someone else, get your hands on people, you know, fail. We always tell people the best way, my dad, you know, what's the best way to really understand something? Fail at it first and then go back and say, well, why didn't this work? Or what, even if you were successful with it, why did it work? So Louise, so once you and Cindy had some time to kind of implement the science, and then as you mentioned, from 05 to 07 was kind of that period where you were taking on this new challenge and role with the clinic. Where was your first course? And if you remember, you know, who that was with or what it was, I believe it was the myokinematic course, but walk us through kind of that first actual PRI exposure to a course.
Yeah, so it was myokinematics taught by James Anderson in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at Lancaster Hospital. And it was, you know, memorable because James was teaching it. He's a memorable instructor, just so gifted at presenting with humor and confidence. He was great. But what was also sort of memorable about that was that Mike Cantrell came and he was learning how to teach it at the time. So that was a thrill for me because I went to school with Mike Cantrell. He and I graduated from Emory at the same time and we were study buddies. So it was Mike Cantrell, Claire Schuster, and myself, the three of us that studied every night for 2.5 years. And when we graduated, we kept somewhat in touch. We get the occasional Christmas card, but you know how it is. You start to lose touch. Facebook wasn't around at that time. And so it was thrilling for me to see him again and just to hear from him about PRI and how passionate he was about it in his whole PRI journey up till that point.
And really, you know, I can only imagine that it probably solidified some of your own interests. You know, okay, maybe, you know, there is something to this. At that point, you were in your first course, and everyone who takes their first course, again, we hope they come out of it with tools immediately to go implement with their clients. But you have to, you know, these things require not only monetary commitment, time commitments, all these commitments that, you know, you're doing for yourself professionally that, you know, really are somewhat of a struggle to determine what's worth it and what's not. So then here you are, you show up to your first course and your past, you know, your past colleague and you know, study buddy, if you will, is sitting there with you. And I'm sure that helped kind of, you know, restore the belief that you're there for a reason and it was worthwhile for you.
Very much so. I remember just having that thought, you know, if Mike Cantrell is a part of it, I know there's something to this because I knew Mike and he's a brilliant man. You know, he always joked about himself and
yeah. And
like, I'm just a, you know, guy from the South. What do I know? But yeah. he's a brilliant man. And I just, that did solidify. I already had a sense that this was a path I wanted to take, but yes, indeed. That certainly helped. And you know, RJ, I remember around that time that I discovered PRI, I also was getting just a little frustrated with the field of physical therapy and wondering how much longer I was going to last. And it's got to be because of the approaches I was taking up until then. You know, the modalities, the e-stim and ultrasound and the, okay, so there was osteopathic manipulation that's helpful, but it just, for me, wasn't enough. I wasn't seeing enough carryover from session to session with my patients. So I was starting to get frustrated and I was looking for something else. I was even starting to consider, gosh, should I go back to medical school? What should I do here? So it just came at the right time for me.
Yeah, and for you and for so many others, I mean, I've already you know, discuss kind of the same situations with the rest of our faculty. And I'm sure moving forward, everyone that I talk to will have similar, you know, you get to a point in your career where you are looking for more, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like this revolutionary epiphany. It could just be, you know, attending a course, and whether that's a PRI course or another school of thought, whatever it may be, you get to that level where you're thirsty for more. You're kind of at a, you know, you're stagnant. You're not necessarily growing. And the interesting thing, Louise, is I remember, I believe Mike was our second podcast episode. And, you know, Mike mentioned you and going to school and studying and learning next to you and kind of, you know, that same relationship with you. But the funny thing about Mike, as you mentioned, is I can just picture him in that course with you, probably in the front row. I don't know if you're a front row gal or not, but Mike has this way of, like, you know when Mike's at a course because he's either asking the most questions or he's in the middle of the room in the front row, at least initially in his PRI journey. And such a great character and a great presence to be at that first exposure. So moving on from that, Louise, you know, as you completed the course and you mentioned taught by James, at that time, there probably really was only, you know, Ron, my dad, James, and Mike was learning. And at that time, Louise, I don't even know if Pelvis was, I'm sure there was an early stage of maybe, you know, the postural course, the myokin course, the cervical craniomandibular course might have been around, but there wasn't, you know, what we have today with all these variety. We have the three primary courses and all these secondary courses and affiliate courses into geriatrics and special populations. Coming into the science at that time in our history, again, kind of parallels you joining the rehab hospital early on in your career and just a period of growth. So here we are kind of growing as an institute when you join. And again, you only had maybe a choice of three courses to attend. And like you said, on the website, there wasn't all this information available, or, you know, we joked around about Facebook earlier, but really it was a new science. So just to have that, again, that confirmation from a colleague that there's something to this, you've really been able to not only grow yourself with the science, but to watch us grow as well. So,
yes, this is true. When I first started, it was just postural respiration, myokinematics, and I did take impingement and instability in 2008. So
okay,
that was also out, but pelvis was not, I don't believe, at the time.
Yeah, and I'm not sure off the top of my head when that was first available, but again, you know, with your history and all those different those outpatient rehab settings, I imagine it had to be kind of a, you know, not for the lack of a better term, kind of a struggle to maybe apply that myokin concept back when you got into those populations. And so after that first course, Louise, were you still with Cindy at the outpatient center, or talk to us a little bit about implementing some of those PRI concepts after taking courses and, you know, like I said, for lack of a better term, the struggle of implementing some of those concepts after you were exposed?
So I took, again, the first course in 07, and I actually applied the coursework to these lymphedema patients. So I remember on one of them, rather than doing the tedious lymphedema work with wrapping of the limb, instead, I tried a little bit of rib manual technique and added in some myokinematic non-manual techniques, and her lymphedema cleared up beautifully. So that was amazing to me. And it was shortly thereafter that I left NRH and I started with a small group that was the cash-based group. So that my you know, initial foray into a cash-based practice was in 2008 at Restore Motion. And their area of expertise was women's health. So it was, so if you look at the timeline of my courses, they're a bit spread out. And again, I asked myself, why is it so spread out? Well, the reason is, all right, so then in 08, I joined this practice and it was mandatory that I take coursework in pelvic floor health. So there were several courses of that. They also were very much into the Michigan State osteopathic approach. And it was, again, mandatory that I attend those continuing education courses that they hosted. So there was a bit of a gap in that. But thankfully, they agreed to host postural respiration in 08. So James came back in and taught that. And then myokinematics in 09, and Mike taught that course. But it was, they weren't completely sold, not like I was sold on it. So that's where the challenge comes in. When your colleagues aren't as maybe comfortable with material or just don't see it the way you do, that's where the challenge comes in. And I decided then to leave that practice. And that was a big reason why. We were just kind of moving in different tangents, I guess, the owners of the clinic and myself. And so then I joined up with Jan Dahmerholt again. So my former manager from my first outpatient experience at NRH, he had his own clinic, and he was very much involved in dry needling. He's like the godfather of dry needling. He teaches coursework around the world. And he did not make it mandatory that I take any courses, but he did suggest it. He said, Louise, you know, we do a lot of dry needling here. Patients come in asking for it. You might want to consider it. And so, of course, I did. And there was as much information on pain science in his coursework as there was dry needling, which is fascinating to me. So I learned all kinds of things about the pain sciences, and Jan encouraged me to do some writing. So I wrote a couple of articles for Advance PT magazine, along those lines. I was involved in writing an article, or a chapter rather, in, I think there's just one book now on dry needling, and this is the book, and I wrote the chapter on the trunk, dry needling for the trunk. But again, he was so involved in dry needling, and despite some just discussions with me about PRI, he said, you know, Louise, it sounds fascinating, but I don't have time. I just don't have time to pursue this. So he's being honest with me. And so again, I decided to leave, and I joined up with a couple of other groups, as you can see on my CV. But after several years of that, I just realized, you know, if I'm going to pursue PRI the way I want to pursue it, and if I'm going to have the time that I want with my patients and apply the approach that I want to approach, I've just got to leave and start my own Kelly PT, which I did in February of 2017. And I'm so glad I did that. It's really allowed me so much flexibility. It's allowed me to treat the way I want to treat. I have an incredibly varied caseload, and I don't think that's, I think that's because I'm on my own. I have found in reflecting back on all of the clinics where I work, there's a tendency for people for the clinic owners, I think, to put you in boxes and to want you to quote unquote specialize in an area. And I've never been one to specialize. I want to know about the whole body. I want to know about everything. So please don't put me in a box and have me specialize. That just has never worked for me. So I think it's, you know, not surprising that my caseload is incredibly varied for that reason.
Wow. You have to almost just take a breath, Louise. I, quite honestly, you know, up until this point, I don't know very many people like you who have had such a diverse, rich, let's call it back, you know, portfolio background of all these different career paths, if you will. So you talk about these people in your life that, you know, even the time you spent learning about dry needling or whatever it may be, what a gift it was just to be exposed to that many different things and to then circle back to where you are today and say, you know, okay, it didn't work out for X, Y, or Z reasons. This didn't work out in this time or in this, you know, place. But without those exposures, you may not have the appreciation for all these different clientele, you know, the clientele that you now see in the wide array of that. So I just, you know, just want to tell you, I don't know personally of someone that has had such a gifted history and timeline with so many different outlook facets, if you will, across the board. So that's a gift in and of itself. And maybe you don't feel the same way, but.
No, I do. And I appreciate that. And I think it has helped me feel very confident to open up my own clinic and to address the needs of so many people. Because yeah, I've had some pretty in-depth experience on all kinds of different syndromes and diagnoses and sports. I've seen a lot.
Yeah. And so that's kind of your your clinical history and where you're at today, Louise. And you reside, you're right on the border, but you treat out of Bethesda now and have been there for quite a while. And is that correct?
Well, actually I treat in Rockville.
Rockville. Okay.
Yeah.
You were in Bethesda for a large chunk of your clinical career. But now you're in Rockville. Okay. I apologize.
No, that's fine. Yes. I'm in Rockville now. I do have my license in DC and occasionally will head into DC to treat a patient or two, but not too often.
Yeah. Louise, so beyond kind of this clinical conversation, let's circle back to not necessarily how you got to where you are in implementing PRI, but more of your course journey, back to your course journey with PRI. What eventually led you to consider become credentialed? Again, who besides Mike and some of the faculty members, and you mentioned Cindy Anderson, but can you think of any other, PRI mentors or other people that were impactful along your PRI journey and kind of the route that you got to becoming certified and credentialing?
That's a good question. And I don't know what really drove me to get the PRC, except for maybe conversations with Mike. I had had a number of courses under my belt. He probably brought it up, like, Louise, when are you going to get your certification in this? And I took, the year before I got the certification, I went to advanced integration. And that was just a fascinating course and very influential for me. And I think after taking that course, because it connected so many dots for me and helped consolidate the information for me, I decided, I'm ready. I'm ready to tackle this application. I'm ready to show them how I've applied this to my patients. I'm ready to show them how I read the literature now, because I read it completely differently, of course, from the PRI perspective. So I just felt ready.
Well, and that's, I can't say that I didn't really have a mindset of how you're going to answer that. But again, that's kind of a conversation that hasn't been brought up yet in some of our other episodes. But the fact of advanced integration being such kind of a capstone for you for the PRI science, I know there's, again, so many other people that attend that course in December because it's offered once a year, but they come to Lincoln, they attend AI for the first time after, let's say, at least the three primary courses, or some people even take advanced integration after one or two courses. But I just want to take just a second to recognize what a powerful course that was for you and for everyone, because of the fact, like you said, you're looking at all the concepts in 4 days at one time, covering myokinematics of the hip and, the pelvis, after we had a pelvis course and got into, more pelvic floor inlets and outlets and respiration. And we have a day 4 on scoliosis and all the gals that work with scoliosis, and they do such a great job. But that is just such a, even from the years I've attended, it's just such a cool course, Louise. And to hear that that's kind of what drove you to say, I think I'm finally ready. That's kind of a cool thing too.
Yeah, that, and on the first day, Ron has all of the PRC applicants stand up. And I just remember thinking, I want to be standing up next year.
Yeah. And it's definitely, again, it's cool that you were there. A lot of people take that course right at the same time they go into testing. And so just to be ingrained with that material and then kind of have that year in between, having the year to apply and go through testing after having that course. I think people ask me all the time, Louise, so you mean I can go to advanced integration you know, the 4 days right before the testing. And I always say, well, yes, that's a route, and it's a considerable route. But just to have, you know, maybe conversely, having that time to kind of dematerialize what you learn and take it, apply it to your application for a year, work on that application, and then go to testing. I think there's something to be said about having it completed prior to applying as well. So
that's what worked for me. And, you know, you can't hear the information enough.
Yeah. And there's really no one, again, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't want to sit here pretending like I'm saying one thing is right and the other route is wrong. For you and this story, it worked out. And I think for a lot of other people, it happens that way as well. So if you thought that question was hard, Louise, I'm going to ask you a harder question, and maybe for you, it'll be easier to answer. But after becoming certified and even getting to another level of understanding and appreciation for the science, what was your first exposure to, and again, I apologize, I don't know this story as well, but how did you get more involved with being considered as possibly a potential faculty member, teaching? Have you taught at all up until this point in your career for other coursework, or obviously everyone does in-services, but did you have an interest in teaching, or was it more something that another person came and mentioned to you?
Well, I've always had, I guess, an interest in teaching, and wondered if sometime in my career, if I'd end up at a university teaching physical therapy. I had briefly discussed with Jan the possibility of teaching dry needling. However, I have to admit, at the time, you know, in the back of my head, I'd much rather be teaching the Institute. But I guess at that time, near the time I was asked, I was working with Julie. She was developing her fitness, her PRI for fitness and movement course. And I remember she sent out a mass email asking if anyone would be interested in just providing some information, if they wanted to be at all a part of developing that course. I thought, oh my gosh, I would love to be a part of this. So I think I was one of the only ones who reached back out to her, which I can't believe. And that very surprising. And so together we worked on it. And I'm going to give her really most of the credit. It is her course, and she did a phenomenal job. But I did give her some input, and I wrote an article with her that's in the course material. And so I think at the time, the Institute was looking for another instructor, and James recognized the effort I put in, because I put in a lot of effort in trying to help. And so he was impressed by that. And Mike was impressed by that as well. And so they approached me and asked if I'd be interested in teaching. And I didn't hesitate a moment to say, yes, of course I would.
Yeah. And I, you know, Louise, we had a chance a few years ago, and I think it was probably close to 2 years ago now, really had a great opportunity to sit down with you and your husband, Bruce, while Jen and I were in Washington, D.C. But you know, again, I apologize. I didn't really know that story as far as being introduced into the faculty role. You know, Louise, every time even faculty's in town or I get to know you guys better, it's always in like group settings. You know, we're all out to dinner together, or we're all at the course together, and you don't really get that one-on-one time. But to be recognized as someone who, like you said, went out of their way to help, you know, whatever, maybe it was just feedback for Julie. You know, for those of those listeners that don't know, Julie's probably at the time one of the more relatively close in location wise PRI people to you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, she's in Virginia Beach, so not too far away, relatively speaking.
So she might have reached out to people around her, or, you know, within the PRI community in your guys' area. Again, as you said, who knows how many people reach back to her, but just having kind of that role with her and that friendship and that, you know, let's just call it bonding and getting closer with the fitness material really sounds like it kind of opened a window for you in that role.
I think it did. And I'm just thankful that I answered that email and got to be a part of, you know, that coursework as well.
And so,
anyway.
Yeah. And so, Louise, at the time, do you remember, you know, if it was Ron or why you mentioned that they were looking for another postural faculty? Have you always had more of a passion? And again, it's kind of an unfair question because you can't have more of a passion for respiration than like myokinematics. It's all together. But what do you think attracted you or them, the relationship you have with the postural material? Was that kind of just fallen into place? Walk us through kind of how you became involved with this course and these concepts.
They asked if I would teach postural, and I have to admit, of all the courses, that was the one I would not have wanted to teach because I thought it was the most complex and I thought I understood it the least, but I didn't want to say no. So RJ, what I did was I got a hold of that home study, a hold of all 430 slides, and I sat down in a quiet room for hours. And I would go over each and every slide and say to myself, okay, what point is Ron making here? Just what point? And I basically retaught myself material. And so that coupled with questions when I reached out to James that I had and Mike and Ron to fill in gaps that I had, that's how I prepared myself. That and, of course, then co-treating with James a couple of times and Mike and your father. And that got me ready.
Well, and again, you know, we keep mentioning that there's all these similar stories to yours and everyone kind of has similar engagement and paths within PRI. But, you know, I think of Dan and I think of some of the other faculty who actually had that same exact opinion. Like, yes, I'd love to teach, but I consider this my weakest area. Like, and even James will tell you way back in the start of the Institute, when he was asked to, you know, kind of help teach with Ron, he really didn't feel ready. And I don't know that as faculty, you know, I'm not there and I'll never be there, but I don't know that it would even be possible to feel ready. You almost have to go through that learning experience, you know, filling the void between a student as an attendee and then a student as a teacher and teaching the material. So to go from like, okay, I think I know this material to, okay, I have to now teach this material. That's really a building, that's part of the process itself.
It's a big, big jump. But as I look back on it now, I'm so thankful that is the course they've asked me to teach. I love the course. And of course, I think it's the most important one. And I think when you master that understanding, everything else just gets a little more easy. And I will say this to Casey Aiken, for instance, who's getting ready to embark on her teaching career, that it's a process. It is. And you get up there, you teach the best that you can, and then you, on Sunday night and Monday, you reflect back on, okay, what went well? What questions did they have? And it gets you better and better at presenting, because you realize then what you weren't clear about. And you do that after each and every course, and it just gets easier and easier and easier.
Well, and really, as I mentioned, it is part of the process itself to not only becoming a better teacher and presenter, but also becoming more, as you mentioned, you get more and more comfortable yourself with the material when you realize, okay, that person asked me that question, and maybe I didn't really think I answered it as best as I could, or I didn't have an answer right off the bat for him. Again, it's a trial and error process. You become better as you go. As you mentioned, we have Casey who's training now. And, you know, really, I think it's safe to say we always hope to have someone in that role of training to become faculty. I don't think anyone listening would disagree that this science is not going anywhere, and we're going to continue to evolve. And it's people like you and these new faculty members that come in, just like you having insight and input for Julie's course. There could be a new course down the road where someone else is coming to you with you know, maybe you're reaching out to a course attendee saying, how could I do better? What could I teach better? So it's just kind of this full circle of, you know, I think of one of the PRC classes we had, Louise, and I think he probably mentions it at all the PRC, with all the PRC groups, but there for a while, my dad and the Institute was very big on, you know, in order to become fully, you know, ingrained in this material, you have to teach it. So we would encourage people to do in-services, and we still do, and people within their own clinics, they take group courses, or they all take the home study together, and we really encourage teaching it to other people around you so that not only they are exposed to it to benefit them and their clients and their patients, but as you said, I mean, there's no better way to learn the material than to teach it over and over and over again.
And you do become a better clinician. As you master the material, it gets that much easier to explain in a very understandable way the concepts you're trying to get across to your patients. I am a way better clinician now because I have started to teach this.
Yeah. And really, Louise, I think in today's world, you know, as we sit here and do this kind of virtual conversation and people are more and more using, you know, telehealth and virtual treatments and Skype sessions and Zoom calls. And really, there's never been an easier time to sit down and teach. And by teach, I just mean talk, you know, sit down and talk to it, talk to someone else about it. And then, you know, have them do the same. Maybe you get three or four people together and all of a sudden you're now learning that material better because of your discussions with other people. So again, I know you probably feel the same way as a lifelong learner, but teach it to others and talk about it to others so that you become more comfortable with it yourself.
And it warms my heart when I get emails after courses from people saying, hey, I've got a question for you. And this came up in, we've just established a PRI study group. And I love hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah, we do too. And we do everything we can to help those individuals find each other. And that's one of my biggest joys with my position is being able to connect people. And whether it's a course attendee with someone in their area, or maybe they have a question for the faculty, or really just making that connection available to people and finding them those other outlets. Louise, I know, you know, we could talk for hours on kind of your passion and your history and, you know, what's most rewarding to you about teaching. But again, kind of another challenging question for you as we get close to wrapping up, but what excites you the most about kind of, you know, we've added more courses in the past 5 to 10 years than ever. And we're now, I'd like to pridefully and proudly say that I believe our trained professionals and PRCs and PRTs and even course attendees are now integrating with other fields more than ever. You know, we have dentists in the room. I just had a couple of chiropractors today sign up for courses and all these different disciplines and such exciting growth. But what excites you personally about, you know, maybe it's the postural course or other courses that you hope to get into, or maybe you want to learn better, but what excites you and what do you have your thoughts on regarding the next couple of years or future with teaching for the Institute?
Well, I want to continue to get better at this because you can always get better. So that, of course, excites me. And I'm really enjoying teaching. Early on, it was a little daunting. But now I've really kind of gotten into a groove, gotten into a flow, and I really, truly enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, at the same time, I'm looking forward to taking other courses. I want to go back to cervical revolution and cranial resolution. And I still have on my list the pediatrics course, the geriatrics course. So there are a lot, impingement instability, I got to take that new course. I need to take the non-manual course. So there are a lot of courses on my list that I still want to take very much. It's just fitting it all in.
Yeah. Again, it kind of goes back to your earlier comments about being put in a box. And we don't ever aim to do that with our faculty. You know, we don't want to put you in a box of saying postural, you teach postural, so, you know, don't worry about other stuff. Again, to understand the big picture and the total integration in totality. You mentioned kind of a bias plug for postural respiration because you teach it. Obviously, we feel the same. It was one of our, it's the foundational concepts. But at the same time, you know, you think about what we just discussed, you can't just drop off all these other issues. The impingement course is awesome at, you know, connecting the heel to the scap, you know, making these connections throughout the body that necessarily don't get covered in just the primary courses. You know, I'm excited for you to take all those courses you listed. And, you know, Louise, unfortunately, up until this point this year, obviously we have far and far less opportunity for some of those to occur and for some people to get to those courses. I can tell you we're really excited about, you know, we have a live stream coming up and just opportunities for us to grow in other ways. And again, it's, we kind of look at it as a desire to adapt to our times. And, you know, you may not be able to make it to, let's say you only get to one of those courses over the next year. That's still bettering yourself as a faculty, as a provider, as a clinician, and as a peer eye learner. So again, for anyone that, that kind of wonders what's next or what should I do now, find one of those courses that interests you. Or like you said, I don't know if it was pediatrics, but I think we're all excited to go to pediatrics someday. Lisa just is doing a great job with that material. So there's so much to be excited for. Louise, to wrap up, I wanted to just kind of take a step back from PRI. I know personally from talking to you and getting to know you over the years, you're still, I believe you're still an avid runner and you've been interested in running most of your life. But what are some of the things that outside of clinical care or teaching that excite you the most, other than, you know, courses and coursework? Walk us through maybe some of your hobbies or biggest joys that you do outside of all this.
Yeah, well, outside of all this, there's not a heck of a lot of extra. Probably my biggest, you know, passion outside of work are my circle of friends. I've got a group of college friends that have met on a girls' night out once a month for like 25 years. So they're a wonderful, wonderful group of women. We've been through a lot together. They're always there for me. I'm just so lucky to have them. I've got family that's close by that I get to see a lot, so I'm lucky for that. You know, I consider the faculty members and all of you at the Institute to be part of my own family and really a part of what I would consider a circle of friends for me. And I really I look forward to continuing just to for our relationship to grow. I've been a competitive runner, and my big goal, I was training for 2.5 years for this, to train in the World Master Championship that was coming up in July in Toronto, and it's been canceled, and there's no date for it. It's just been permanently canceled. So the next Worlds is not for another 2 years. I'll see if I can hang in there. It's a lot of training, but I do enjoy it, and I've been able to get to know another circle of friends, and that is through the Athena Track Club. So it's a track club comprised of master's women, so women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they're just a very inspirational group, amazing, amazing athletes. So I've loved getting to know them.
And that's really what it's all about, is these connections and these relationships through whether it be running or your college group of friends. And I know personally, Louise, we're all kind of probably in the same boat right now when it comes to struggling to continue those relationships currently with our situations. But what an important piece of all of this is just the connection and the communication and having that balance between work and fun and goals and play. And I have to say, I never consider myself a runner, and to this day, I still don't. But I myself have taken up running, and I think it's one of the greatest things we can do right now is to just stay active and moving, you know, provided you have the space. I think you're in a community where you probably have a good trail. We have some trail systems here that are just awesome, but I know you're an outdoor runner. I'm not a treadmill type, so.
No, definitely outdoor runner. Same.
Yeah.
I can't think of the last time I was on a treadmill. That's torture to me.
Well, and 2 years, so we'll hold you to that, Louise, to stay at your same level of training for 2 more years. That's going to be tough, but...
Indeed. But it's fun, and I'm going to try.
I think you can do it. We'll wait and see. But Louise, again, I really want to thank you for spending the time today, not only for myself personally. I'll be honest, I probably enjoy this more than the large portion of the listeners, but just having people getting to know you and having that time to sit down and hear some of your story. For anyone listening, Louise, you mentioned a little bit of your authorship and how you've written various articles for different you know, whether it be Advanced Magazine or whatever. For anyone listening, those can all be found on Louise's faculty page, and we'll make sure we get any new ones. You know, it's been a while since I've actually read through all of those articles of all of our faculty, but the majority of them, I think, are on there, Louise, for anyone interested in seeing some of the work you've done. And again, Louise, you're practicing Rockville, am I correct, this time, Rockville, Maryland, outpatient clinic, and it sounds like, you know, hopefully you're now able to kind of implement and see the clientele you want. And I know it's still a huge wide array of people and different cases, but for anyone interested or would like to reach out to Louise in that area, obviously a great provider of ours, and really anyone is so fortunate who works with you. Louise, do you have any other comments or additional things you'd like to mention before wrapping up?
Not really. I'm just, you know, thank you for taking the time to interview me and give me an opportunity to really reflect upon an entire career. I have to admit, I have not ever done that. So it was a nice exercise for me. And no, I look forward to future interviews because there are so many out there in PRI Nation, so many brilliant people with a lot to say and a lot to share. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, and again, thank you. And I think we can all, you know, with a resounding agreement, realize that that starts with our faculty and that starts with you guys. So again, I'm probably the most biased one of all. And again, I probably appreciate these conversations maybe more than others, but I think there's so much value to the history behind our faculty and what it takes to get to where you are and the struggles and kind of some of the, just the ins and outs that people don't really, you know or hear or get the chance to sit down and talk to you about. Again, I think for our listeners, I'm going to kind of throw you out there, Louise, but I think you would be available to anyone interested to just who has interest in any of the things you are passionate about, or, you know, even if it's just a course attendee asking a question. I know you guys are so great at staying connected. So again, I appreciate all that you do and hearing more about you. As you mentioned, we look forward to kind of moving into some more of the implementation of our science. You know, PRI Nation has such a wide array of clinical expertise, athletic performance, movement science, you know, even into areas of sleep and nutrition and all these specialties. So again, I just want to say thank you to our listeners who have continued this journey with us. We hope all of you are doing well and staying safe. And again, thanks, Louise, for joining us.
Thank you, RJ.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.